Kim and Marion Calvert. Argument on the merits.
Bennett.
Thank you. May it please the court, and I've asked the clerk to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. The circuit court in this case misconstrued Article 16, Section 2 of the Constitution and Hawaii Revised Statute, Section 87A-23, and its judgment should be reversed. In addition, although it is not necessary to so decide in order to reverse the circuit court, the implication that retirees by the passage of either Act 88 or 89 have been denied any benefits of any kind is simply wrong. The key constitutional question revolves around Article 16, Section 2, and its construction, of course, starts with its words. Membership in any employee's retirement system of the state or any political subdivision thereof shall be a contractual relationship, the accrued benefits of which shall not be diminished or impaired. As this court said in Ka'ohanohano, and in fact so described, if I counted correctly, 22 times, this is the pension provision of the Constitution. Not today, not when the Constitution was adopted, and not at any time since then, has the payment of health premiums been a benefit of membership in the employee's retirement system. The benefits of membership in the employee's retirement system have never included the state's payment of health premiums. As Justice Acoba, writing for the court in Ka'ohanohano, made very clear, the entirety of the debate in the 1950 Constitutional Convention was about pensions, was about the concern that the territorial pension system had defaulted, I believe, in the 20s, and wanting to make sure that the retirees who paid their pension benefit payments while they were employed got their pension benefits when they retired. While there was a material disagreement between the majority opinion and the dissenting opinion authored by the Chief Justice, there was no controversy of any kind between the two opinions as to the nature of the pension provision. It protected the pension payments the ERS made. It is, although the Ka'ohanohano opinion is infused with quotes of these types, a few suffice to demonstrate this point. As the court said at 114 Hawaii at 351 note 39, the intent of the framers is to create a constitutional pension provision. The court quoted from the various delegates in the opinion saying the framers manifestly intended to protect the retirement system itself from diminishment or impairment, 114 Hawaii at 348. The health benefits system, well, first of all, there was no health plan in effect either in 1950 or when Hawaii became a state. But the health benefits plan, when it came into existence as the public employees health system in 1961, was not administered by the employees retirement system, was never a part of the employees retirement system, and is not so now. Although plaintiffs point to the fact that in territorial days, an indigent pensioner could go to a state hospital for free medical care, that's neither here nor there. This case is not about the state attempting to take away from anybody the right to go to the state hospital or to a Department of Health physician if they're entirely dependent on their pension for care. It is about whether the Constitution requires the state to pay health insurance premiums for retirees, and it does not. If there were any question about this, this court also in Ka'ohanohana, 114 Hawaii at 342, noted that the delegates in 1950 particularly adopted the New York model. They took virtually verbatim the provision from New York State's Constitution. The delegates to the Constitutional Convention, in particular Delegate Ort, who this court relied on, Delegate Ort discussing this at volume 2 of the proceedings of the convention at 494, we are modeling our system after New York. And in the New York Court of Appeals in the Lipman case faced this precise issue under the identical provision of New York's Constitution. and made it clear in Lippman that the provision protects only the benefits of membership in a retirement system, that whatever statutory right there may or may not be to the payment of health care premiums, that is not part of New York's retirement system, never was, and so whatever other protection there may or may not be, it is not protected under the pension provision of New York law, just like it is not protected under the pension provision of Hawaii's Constitution. The Circuit Court relied on an inapposite Alaska case, the Duncan case. Our view of Duncan is simply that it was wrongly decided, but irrespective of whether it was wrongly decided or not, it is distinguishable on the most fundamental ground, which is that the payment of health premiums in Alaska was a benefit of the Alaska retirement system. The particular statute which reflects this is in the Circuit Court Record on Appeal, Volume 1, at pages 358 to 359. The Alaska statute at issue 39.35.535 particularly states that the payment of premiums is a benefit of membership in the Alaska retirement system. It is entirely distinguishable from here, where the payment of health premiums is not a benefit of the employee's retirement system.
Mr. Bennett, in New York, does a retired employee's eligibility for health benefits, is that conditioned on membership in the retirement system?
I don't believe so. I believe what the court said, other employment conditions, though they may be protected by statute, resolution, or individual or collective bargaining agreement, are not within its coverage. And that's a quote from the Court of Appeals.
Does that make Lippman applicable to our present situation then?
Absolutely, Your Honor, because the situation factually and legally is indistinguishable. Although the court need not reach the question to reverse the Circuit Court. In addition, retirement health care premium benefits are not an accrued benefit, which is also a requirement of our constitutional provision. A case directly on point, and I may be mispronouncing the name, the Studier or Studier case from Michigan. The court specifically found, with a provision that's virtually identical to Hawaii's, that this is not an accrued benefit, and in addition, pursuant to ERISA. Although ERISA was obviously adopted after our constitutional provision, the relevant portion of the ERISA statute is described in the administrative record at page 316. ERISA accrued benefits do not include medical insurance benefits. Thus,
in Michigan, however, aren't the accrued benefits couched in terms of financial benefits?
In Michigan?
Yes, on this, you cited to the Studier case.
Yes.
So is that different from our constitution, where it's not? We don't refer to financial benefits, but just accrued benefits in general?
It's a different word. It does say the accrued financial benefits of each pension plan shall be a contractual obligation. So, but I would say that to the extent plaintiff's argument stands or falls at all, their argument is that this is financial benefit. They argue that the state should pay money on behalf of the retirees. So I would say respectfully, it's a distinction without a difference. Secondly, the circuit.
Mr. Bennett, the petitioners make the argument that the term benefit is broad or should be read in terms of the common understanding of that term. So would the provision of health coverage be considered fall within the term benefit?
Health coverage can be a benefit, but it's not a benefit of membership in the employee's retirement system, which is what our constitutional provision protects. So if the Constitution had said any benefit which an employee gets upon employment is something that they're entitled to when they retire, then there would be an argument, but it's not a benefit of membership in the retirement system, and it's not within the protection of the pension provision of the Constitution.
Well, the petitioners argue that sections 87A, 33 through 36 tie the provision of health benefits to retirement. In other words, to the length of time that an employee serves before retiring from service. So does the statute in effect indicate that the provision of health benefits is tied in fact to the time within which a retiree works as an active employee?
Well, the statute does make clear that if you currently work a certain amount of time, you're going to get your health benefits paid after you retire. But the statutes also make clear it's not a benefit of membership in the employee's retirement system, and it's certainly not part of your pension, and that's what the Constitution clearly protects.
Well, if you read the language accrued benefit, could you interpret that to indicate that the benefit accrues because of the time that the employee serves on active status?
It doesn't accrue, Your Honor, but more importantly, whether it accrues or not, it's not a part of your pension, and it's not a benefit of membership in the employee's retirement system.
The term accrued benefit isn't limited to pension or defined benefit or anything of that sort, is it?
That's the way courts have interpreted it. That's the way ERISA interprets it, and that's the common meaning of the term. So we would suggest, as the board found, it's not an accrued benefit. But again, even if the court differs with us on the nature of the term accrued, it's not within the protection of the pension provision of the Constitution under Ka'ohano'ohano, and it's not a benefit of membership in the ERS. The circuit court also grossly misconstrued Hawaii Revised Statute 87A-23. This is a statute entitled Health Benefits Plan Supplemental to Medicare, and it makes clear that there should be no distinction among retirees between those who are eligible for Medicare and those who aren't. That's what the EUTF found at pages 982 to 83 of the administrative record. And the title of this section is Health Benefits Plan Supplemental to Medicare. There is no conceivable logical reading of this statute under which retirees are being compared to active employees. The entire purpose of this section is to compare early retirees, that is, those who retire before they're eligible for Medicare, with retirees who are eligible for Medicare. That's exactly what the statute says. And in addition, before these statutes were passed, there was a requirement. In 87-27, the Public Employees Health Fund statute, that the benefits offered to retirees be the same as those offered to active employees. That was specifically taken out of the statute, both as the EUTF found and is obvious from looking at the Ramsayer version of the statute, Section 7 of Act 89. They had a section that said you had to have parity. They took out the section that said you had to have parity, and instead they put in a section which says you can't discriminate among retirees based on who's eligible for Medicare and who isn't. This is entirely consistent with this court's description of what the legislature did in the Awakuni case, authored by Justice Duffy. The court in Awakuni said the purpose of these statutes was to make the cost of insurance affordable. The court said the trustees were granted broad discretion in designing plans, and in fact, the court said that other than the requirement in 87A-15 that the plans must be affordable to public employers and employees, as the court said in Awakuni, the legislature gave no guidance for plan development except affordability. And as the EUTF specifically stated in their order, what is affordable to retirees is different from what is affordable to active employees. Obviously, one, because active employees work, and two, because active employees pay for their medical care. Why would the legislature pass a statute that says when one pays for it and the other doesn't, they have to be the same? And in fact, the legislature didn't pass such a statute. The genesis for the acts was the auditor's report reported at page 351 of the administrative record, where the auditor said, which entirely logically, the plan, that is the then plan, provides essentially the same coverage for actives and retirees, yet their medical needs can be significantly different. Obviously, their medical needs could be and are significantly different, and as the court in Awakuni found, the legislature gave the EUTF significant discretion in designing the two plans.
Mr. Bennett, how does the petitioner's argument regarding the constitutionality of, or the unconstitutionality of the board's action affect its argument regarding parity? For example, assuming that the Constitution, assuming for the sake of argument that accrued benefit would extend to health care benefits, under Kaho Hanohano and other decisions, the benefits given to retirees cannot be reduced or diminished. So, assuming that that is the case going forward, how does the benefits granted to active employees affect that proposition?
Well, and although I understand it's a hypothetical, the fact is the benefits of retirees were never diminished. The board specifically found that they got what they had always gotten, which is 100% of their medical payments paid for, taking into account Medicare, which is exactly what the retirees wanted. We put in the medical record, in the administrative record, for example, the testimony of several of the retirees who came to every meeting who said, we have the same benefits we've always had, which is 100% of Medicare-covered benefits that were paid for. They begged the board not to track the actives. They said, we don't want new or different benefits because we understand that with the cap the legislature has established, we'll have to pay for it if it gets too expensive. That I believe they wore T-shirts and buttons that said, no more, no less. If you look at the administrative record at 975, the EUTF order at 8, they kept telling the board, nothing more, nothing less. We don't want what some of the union active members had in the plan, which they have to pay for. All we want is what we've always had, which is 100% paid for. And that's what they got, 100% paid for. The testimony was clear before the EUTF that if they had added new things to the retiree coverage, which had been added to the active coverage, because keep in mind, there are no more union plans except for one, and the board decided to add to the actives some of the things that the union plans covered, which weren't covered by Medicare. But they couldn't add those without charging the retirees. The rates would have exceeded the legislative cap. We wanted, as the advisor to the board testified before the EUTF at page 80 of the transcript, we wanted to be able to continue the past practice of providing benefits to retirees at no cost. A declaration written and submitted by Ms. Ruth Kim, the past president of the HSTA, who attended every EUTF meeting, and it's reported at page 786 of the administrative record. This would be devastating to aged, long-retired teachers and all other similarly situated retirees who survive on their pensions alone. This concern of out-of-pocket cost overrides the desire for more or different benefits. Mr. George Yamamoto, the HGEA retiree representative, testified at page 61 at the hearing, our analysis showed that within a year, the cap would have been reached and it would have been either less benefits or out-of-pocket money for the retirees. He said at page 66, we didn't want more. We just wanted to keep what we have. There is nothing in any statute currently on the books or any promise allegedly ever made to any retiree that you're going to get the exact same benefits that active employees get, even though active employees pay for them. So while we believe it is clear that the statute was construed incorrectly by the court because it talks about the difference between active retirees who are, it talks about the difference between pre-Medicare retirees, that is early retirees, and regular retirees, the court misconstrued the statute. Even if you look at the statute, there's nothing in any previous statute which said you have to give exactly the same thing to both. The circuit court's actual ruling is one that doesn't even make any sense. The circuit court said that the plans must be near or close to the active plans, that they must be affordable, and they must be within the limits of the retiree health benefit contribution caps. Well, we don't live in a world where you can have all three of those things. You can't have, they get what the actives get, it has to be affordable, and it has to be free. There's nothing that ever promised that, but the retirees, even under the plaintiff's theory, don't get free health care if it exceeds the caps. They have to pay for it, which is what is particularly ironic about the argument that plaintiffs are making here. Counsel for the plaintiffs argued before the EUTF at page 21 of the transcript, we want to follow the fortunes of the active workers who are able to, through time, get better and better benefits. That statement has proven to be clearly not prescient. Actives have not gotten better and better benefits in the last 2 years, and in fact, the retirees do not want to follow the fortunes of the active workers. The plaintiffs said...
Do you disagree with the court's finding that there are differences with respect to certain benefits?
The court
sets out $2,000 maximum dental benefits versus $1,000, 80% versus 60% coverage for endodontic treatment, etc.
The two dental parts, there is a difference because dental is not part of what Medicare covers. So there is a minor difference between actives and retirees in dental. The third one, the circuit court found, I don't particularly understand because the testimony was clear that retirees get 100% paid for of all of their Medicare-covered benefits. And I believe that is a Medicare-covered benefits. The petitioners argued at Circuit Court Record on Appeal 1-23, they conceded that neither actives nor retirees get 100% of their medical paid for. And this is in their statement of their case. In other words, they said basically, yeah, if the benefits we're arguing for cost the retirees money, well, that's life. Then they'll have to pay for it. Except that's not the current system. It's not what the retirees want. And while the EUTF under the Iwakuni case has the freedom to make the retirees pay more, make the retirees pay to give them extra benefits as long as it's still affordable, clearly under Iwakuni, they have the discretion to say, we're going to give you 100% of Medicare. We're going to completely pay all of your Medicare premium. We're going to cover everything that's under Medicare, but we're not going to give you all of the bells and whistles of the active care, because if we did, and they found this in 2003 and 2004, we'd be up against the legislative cap. We'd have to make you pay for it, and you've told us again and again and again, we don't want to pay. No more, no less. So again, Your Honor, our argument comes down to two legal issues. First, it is clear beyond cavil that the Constitution doesn't protect the payment of health care premiums. It's clear from the language, and it's explicitly clear from Ka'ohana'ohana, where, as I said, this provision was described as the pension provision 22 times. It is manifestly clear that the circuit court grossly misconstrued 87A-23. It is comparing early retirees to Medicare retirees. It is not comparing early, it is not comparing retirees to active. And finally, Your Honor, the remedy that plaintiffs seek, while it is conceivable that it might benefit some retiree with a lot of endodontic care, and while it might provide collateral benefits in some way to those who brought the suit, it could lead to devastation for the retirees. It's not what they wanted. It's not consistent with either fairness or justice. But even if it was, it's contrary to the law. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. The decision of the circuit court should be affirmed. Article 16, Section 2 protects all the benefits of membership, not just the payment of cash pensions. And the benefits of membership, since before the Constitution was adopted and ratified in 1959, have included the right to health care. The ruling laws of Hawaii, Section 6-4, provided at that time that any retiree who lived on his or her pension or who had other sources of income which were so small that they qualified under the statutory ceiling were entitled to absolutely free health care without condition. That relationship makes Hawaii like Alaska and unlike New York, where, as the court said in Lippman, there was only an incidental relationship between the provisions of prevention of pension law and the provision of health care. Hawaii, like Alaska, has always tied the two together in some fashion. And the history of the constitutional debates leading up to the adoption of Article 16, Section 2, reflects that the delegates were aware that the future would bring changes. And those changes might include the adoption of new systems or different systems which would better deliver the kind of benefits that retirees might enjoy. And that, in fact, happened in 1961 when the legislature adopted the first comprehensive health insurance plan, which provided in Chapter 87 that the benefits of that system were available to the members of the employee retirement system. And in particular, it provided that as for retirees, it was available to all retirees who were members of the employee retirement system. They made it a benefit of membership. And if there's any doubt about that, then I would ask you to look at the record. This is in Volume 2, page 249. You'll find a copy of the 1978 pamphlet, which this court considered in the first Chun case in 1980. And the court at that time said that this pamphlet was entitled to great weight in understanding how the law, the pension law, was to be applied. And in this pamphlet, it says, in a series of questions and answers, that one of the questions that's asked is, am I entitled to other benefits? And this pamphlet put out by the employees' retirement system says, yes. In addition to cost of living benefits, you're entitled to medical care for you or your family without cost.
Justice Acoba. State makes the argument that, well, there are those pamphlets out there, but the law has been changed since then. But the reason you rely on those pamphlets is to indicate that benefits have been, in the past, right, part of the membership. Part of the retirement membership status.
Package, that's right. They were part of the package. And they became vested, or in the terms of Article 16, Section 2, they became accrued when the members served during the time that these benefits were promised. And it is true that in 2001 they changed the law, but under Article 16 they had the ability to change the law in 2001 only prospectively. and to say that for people who were hired after 2001, the rules are going to change. And from time to time, they've done that, tinkering with the benefits that new employees get, but they cannot, under the Constitution, tinker with the benefits of membership for people who have worked and given their services based on that bargain that was struck.
Just want to establish one proposition,
yes,
at least on the constitutional issue, that your position is that accrued benefits include health coverage, and that as far as retirees are concerned, that coverage cannot be diminished or reduced as a result of the constitutional provision.
That's correct, because under Chapter 87 from 1961 to 2001, and then currently, the benefits of membership in the ERS have included the provision of health care, and therefore they are constitutionally mandated benefits that have accrued. Now, with respect to the issue of the modification, in Chapter 87, there was a provision that provided parity with the active workers. And we don't need today to address the question of what would happen if active workers suddenly were given less in the way of benefits than they've ever had before.
So the statutory issue is actually a separate issue.
Very, very separate. Because, and let me digress a little bit to that issue. The statutory provision in question talks only about coordination of Medicare benefits with the benefits provided to other, quote, similarly situated employees. Mr. Bennett suggests that means similarly situated retirees. There's nothing in 87A-23 that says similarly situated retirees. And it's our position that what that means is other employees who are similarly situated in terms of their tenure, their term of service, and their vested rights. If somebody who retired at age 55 worked for 30 years and someone who served the same 30-year period and retired at 65, they have the same accrued rights, and therefore they're entitled to parity one versus the other. It's not a 65-year-old retiree with 30 years of service versus a 55-year-old retiree with 5 years of service, because they didn't serve the same time and may not have acquired the same vested interest in the health care benefits that are provided by statute. Now, in addition to the 1978 brochure, which this court has relied upon before, we find the same thing, and these are all in the record, we find the same thing in a 1982 brochure put out by the ERS, where they describe additional benefits available, this time to, quote, retired members. So that even the ERS recognized that the health care benefits are provided to its members as a benefit of membership. And then in the 1990s, there was a larger brochure put out by the administration. And under the heading retirement plans, here it says under this is again the record at volume 2, page 265, it says employees retirement system. It describes the cash pension, and then it goes on to say, and under current state laws, retirees do not have to pay any monthly contribution for their medical, drug, and other coverages. So that regardless of what Mr. Bennett or the state would like to say today, the fact is historically this linkage between cash pensions and health benefits has long been recognized by the state. And in fact, even the EUTF and most recently the legislature have recognized this linkage, because in 2007, the legislature adopted 87A-33.5, and that provision provides retirees who move out of state with the right to a cash payment in lieu of health coverage. And they get the cash payment because, according to the legislative history, without that cash payment, they will have been deprived of their, quote, vested health care benefits. So again, we find the state outside of this courtroom recognizing that there is, in fact, with employees, a vested interest in their health care benefits. And because Chapter 87 and 87A have always linked membership in the ERS to the entitlement to health care benefits, what you find is, I think, exactly as they found in Alaska, the kind of close relationship that brings the health care benefits within the scope of the Article 16, Section 2. Now, how is that different than New York? Well, first, let me suggest that in the dissent in Kaho'ohano, Chief Justice Moon recognized that there are differences between New York and Hawaii, such that under certain circumstances, the New York case law to be read with some, I won't say suspicion, but some doubt as to whether it applies fully in Hawaii. But also in the Lippman case, they recognized that there was just an incidental relationship, and the New York law provided that, in fact, retired employees' health care premiums would be paid out of their retirement plan, not as part of their retirement plan. So you see an entirely different structure in New York than you saw in Alaska or than you see in Hawaii.
I just wanted to point out that in Lippman, the New York court said there was one case that they decided was not directly related to retirement benefits.
Correct.
That was the Scaglione case.
Right.
And that, at least in the majority in Kaho'ohano, we relied on that case so that we took the position that would be opposite from that stated in Lippman.
Right. The other thing that's important about Kaho'ohano is that there is nothing in either the majority opinion or the dissent which indicates that this case should be decided in favor of the state. In fact, to the contrary, not only did that case involve entirely different issues about funding mechanisms and the financial stability of the fund, but also the dissent recognized that and argued that what was important was the relationship between the retiree and the system in which they were participating. And here, the system in which they are participating is both the ERS insofar as it relates to a cash pension, but also the public employees health fund and the current corollary, the EUTF, both of which are conditioned on membership. And so if you tie those together, as the dissent indicates that you should look at the systems, what you have is an integrated system of cash and health benefits. And when the system can't provide the health benefits, it provides more cash to retirees. These things are tied together, and the health benefits are simply an accrued benefit of membership in the ERS. Now, this case is not just about whether the premiums there should be no premiums charged to retirees. It is also about the quality and the breadth of coverage, and it's also about the size of the copays. That is the amount you have to pay in addition to insurance in order to get service from a doctor. Now, Mr. Bennett says it's impossible for the EUTF to provide equal coverage because of the caps. The testimony and the record before the EUTF shows otherwise. For people who are insured by Kaiser, the EUTF arranged a package of benefits where the retirees get exactly what the active workers get. It's only with respect to the people who are covered by HMSA that there is a difference. And there's only a difference, the record reflects, because the EUTF decided that it was going to separately negotiate prices for active workers and retirees, unlike what it did with Kaiser. And the record reflects that Mr. Williams, the administrator, said if they had priced everybody who was insured by HMSA together, as they did with Kaiser, they could have provided exactly equivalent benefits within the statutory caps. Now, it may be that someday that's not possible. It may be that someday we'll be back here saying that the legislature can't adopt caps which are so low that they can't provide free comparable coverage, but that's not today. And the fact that 87A does not have the language found in 87, where it says benefits, equal benefits will be available to everybody regardless of age, does not necessarily reflect the legislative intent. In fact, it certainly doesn't reflect a legislative intent to somehow take anything away from retirees. The legislative record in 2001 is replete with legislators saying, we're not taking anything away. We're not taking anything away. And despite that, the EUTF adopts a system where retirees have higher co-pays and lower coverage in a variety of important areas. Now, Mr. Bennett says, well, what about chemo? Mr. Bennett says, well, that's a benefit of Medicare. Well, that's terrific for the retirees who are over 65, but it doesn't do anything for the retirees who are under 65 and not eligible for Medicare. And what you have then is exactly the kind of discrimination that was not permitted under the Public Employees Health Fund up until 2001. And discrimination which is not authorized by anything in Chapter 87A.
Mr. Alston, what do you have to say to Mr. Bennett's argument that the retirees really don't want this?
There is no doubt that there was a lot of fear-mongering about the fact that better benefits would come at a higher cost. But in light of the testimony of Mr. Williams, that the EUTF could have provided full coverage without exceeding the statutory caps. In light of the evidence that the EUTF had a very, very large nine-figure surplus and the statutory authority to avoid passing on costs, no basis for that concern, and there's no reason for this court to be concerned that by ruling in our favor, you're somehow going to be burdening retirees with expenses that are not due. In fact, it was interesting that Mr. Bennett would quote the statement, I believe, of the representative of HSTA, who said she was worried about the ability of people who lived only on their pensions to get to afford health coverage. Well, the fact is, Section 88-4 even now provides that somebody who's living only on their pension is entitled to absolutely free health care. So it's just not a concern. It is simply not a concern. And the other part of it is that if, in fact, as I said, if you come to a day where the caps are inadequate to provide comparable free health care, then we would be back addressing the issue as to whether the caps themselves comply with Article 16, Section 2, but that's not today. There's nothing in the record that indicates you need to be concerned about that.
Can you explain again why we should not accept the state's position that what the statute really refers to is early retirees and retirees 65 years old and
yes.
Over?
First, there is nothing in 87A-23 that says similarly situated refers to younger retirees. That's an argument that was you can't find that position in any rule, in any regulation, in any pre-litigation pronouncement by the EUTF as to what they're doing or why they're doing it. So that you don't have a situation where there is some pre-existing authoritative interpretation. You have something that's been driven by litigation. Second, if they were to make that determination, it's one that's grounded fundamentally in Article 16, Section 2, which deals with the rights of retirees and what the EUTF is arguing for is that it's entitled to discriminate between retirees and actives, and it can reduce the benefits for all retirees down as long as all the retirees stay at the same level. You can't do that without violating Article 16, Section 2. You can't say the retirees get less and less and less and less, and as long as all retirees, young and old, are equal, it's okay. The reference to similarly situated workers only makes sense in the context of comparing the retirees under Medicaid with the with all the actives who have a similar tenure and years of service.
Why is that?
Why is it? Because again, if you're going to compare retirees to retirees, you are by definition accepting the notion that it's possible to discriminate between retirees and active workers. You're permitted to give retirees substantially less than they ever had under the provisions of Chapter 87, and actually allowing the reduction of health benefit of state-funded health or county-funded health benefits down to zero, because all it is a supplementation to Medicare. There's no indication that the legislature intended that. And again, if you look at the history of Chapter 87A, the legislature said we're not taking anything away from retirees, but what Mr. Bennett's or the state's interpretation of Section 23 would allow is just that, taking things away from retirees. As long as all the retirees, you know, are in the same boat, it's okay. So that is why we say you simply can't look at only at young and old retirees in interpreting that section.
So, Ms. Olson, as far as the provision concerning shall not be diminished or impaired, you're indicating just because the retirees are not getting what the active didn't come up is what is being diminished, that's the showing of diminished or impairment?
Well, it is not only that they didn't get the same quality of benefits, but they've also got larger copays. So that you have active workers paying 10% of certain doctor visits. You've got retirees paying 20%. You've got larger deductibles. You've got a variety of direct front-end higher expenses being put on to retirees compared to what's being borne by the active workers. And so it's in that respect, when you compare what they had under Chapter 87 up to 2001 to the system that's now been come into effect where they're chipping away at parity, that creates the problem.
But is that based primarily on 87A, 23?
No, that's because 87A, 23 really deals only with the people who are on Medicare. It is really driven by Article 16, Section 2, and the fact that up to 2001, every employee who had accrued benefits accrued them under a system where the statute provided that they would receive the same benefits regardless of age, and we submit that is a corollary for or a proxy for regardless of retirement status. Everybody got the same benefits, active or not, retired. That's why we say that. Now, Mr. Bennett mentioned the Studier case from Michigan. The Studier case is inapplicable and wrong for several reasons. First, in Michigan, the statute uses the phrase accrued financial benefits. Hawaii doesn't use that phrase. Hawaii talks about the benefits of membership. Second, in Studier, they interpreted the word accrued to mean in the financial sense, as time passes, you get more and more of something, whether it's interest or something else. If you look at Black's Law Dictionary, and if you look at indeed any dictionary, you'll see that the accrued means vested. Accrued means already earned. And it's in that sense that it's used in Article 16, Section 2. Further, even if you want to use it, or even if one would want to use it in the sense that the Studier Court used, it means that it grows over time. The reality is that the statutes of Hawaii have and currently do have a system where the longer one works, the better the health benefits in retirement. Currently, if you work less than 25 years, you get a single, you get part of the premiums paid on a single person health policy, and that applies to people who are newly hired now. Conversely, if they work for 25 years, they get a free personal health policy and they get some family benefits paid. So in that sense, even in that sense, Hawaii does have accrued benefits for, related to health care. An issue came up in the briefing with respect to the contracts clause of the federal constitution. As reflected in the discussion in Ka'ohanahana, it is our view that the contracts clause in the U.S. Constitution basically becomes superfluous to this discussion. The Hawaii Constitution in Article 16 provides coextensive protection with the federal constitution. And so in that respect, we think that you don't need to look at what the U.S. Constitution might provide. If you did look there, then as we explained in the briefs, you would find the kind of protection that we've argued for. But you don't need to go there with respect to deciding this case today. I'd just like to come back to the fact that for decades, career public servants of Hawaii have been an incredibly powerful engine for social progress, for economic progress, and they served under terms where they took less in the way of salary in return for the promise of long-term financial security. An important aspect of that financial security has been, since 1961, the provision of health benefits through insurance. That provision ties directly back into the guarantee of free health care for poor retirees. And it complements that in a way that reflects that these two types of benefits are tied together for the enjoyment of all the members of the ERS. If you're not a member of the ERS, you don't get a pension. If you're not a member of ERS, you don't get health care. Both flow because of one's status as a retired member of the ERS. Both constitute benefits which are protected under Article 16. And I would ask that you affirm Judge Hifo's ruling with respect to that constitutional issue. Similarly, with respect to the statutory issue, that is the rights of young retirees versus Medicare eligible retirees, I would ask you find that in looking at the quality of benefits, you have to look not just at the pool of retirees, but also consider the rights of similarly situated active workers, people who have worked the same time under the same legal construct of eligibility, and determine that all retirees, young and old, get what the active workers get under that statute. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Health premium payments were never a benefit of membership in the employee's retirement system. They're never protected by the pension clause. In order to rule in plaintiff's favor on the constitutional issue, this court would need to rewrite the Constitution and would also need to rewrite both the majority opinion and the dissent in Ka'ohanahana. No matter how you read that case or the provision, it protects pensions. This isn't a pension. Whether it's protected by statute or not is a different question, but it's not a pension. In addition, there was never a promise to any retiree that they would get what the active members got. Even the things that Mr. Alston read, page 248 at the administrative record, in addition to a retirement benefit, the retirement has health and life insurance benefits at no premium cost. Page 256, one of these brochures, under current law, retirees with 10 years of service do not have to pay any monthly contribution for medical benefits. There was never a promise that what they would get would be what they would get for free would be what the actives have to pay for. With regard to the Chief Justice's question, nothing was taken away from retirees. Indeed, this court could decide this case without reaching any legal issue, vacate the circuit court's decision, and say, irrespective of the law, nothing was taken away. They got exactly what they got before the law changed. Nothing was taken away. And in fact, the testimony and the EUTF specifically found that Medicare and non-Medicare retirees get 100% of Medicare covered paid for. This is in the administrative record at 976, 974, and 975. All retirees get 100% of Medicare covered payments. With regard to the statute, Mr. Alston, perhaps accidentally, in talking about 87A23, says, well, that deals with Medicare. Well, of course it does. It deals with Medicare. If you go back and read the transcript, he essentially, in that remark, conceded we win on the statutory issue. It obviously compares early retirees with late retirees. It's only an Alice in Wonderland reading of that statute which could result in a comparison between retirees and actives. There's no conceivable reading of the statute, and indeed what they argued to the EUTF, and this is at the administrative record at 94 footnote 16, in order to explain why the statute reads the way it did, they say perhaps the reference in the statute to Medicare is an oversight. That was the entirety of their statutory construction argument to the EUTF, which is, well, yeah, it obviously compares early retirees and late retirees, but perhaps, and I quote, perhaps the reference to Medicare in the statute is an oversight. Before the statute was passed, under 87, Chapter 8727, there was a requirement of equality. When the statute was amended, the requirement of equality was entirely removed from the statute.
Mr. Bennett, if Article 16, Section 2, the reference to accrued benefits refers only to pensions, is that what your argument is?
It refers to the benefits the ERS gives you. The ERS gives you benefits. The ERS doesn't give you health benefits. You don't get...
Okay, so you're saying accrued benefits refers only to pensions.
I'm saying it refers to pensions. It's the pension provision. But even if it could refer to something else that the ERS gave you, some other benefit that the retirement system decided to give you beside pensions, the retirement system does not now and has never provided health premiums. It's never been part of the ERS. So there was another benefit that the ERS provided, they've never provided health benefits. They don't now provide health benefits. So even if it could be an accrued benefit, if the ERS provided it, the ERS doesn't provide it. But again, Your Honor, the constitutional provision makes it absolutely clear that it has to be a benefit of the ERS. And right now, the benefits of the ERS are pensions, which is what the framers were concerned about. There was never...
Mr. Bennett, excuse me. Is there a statute that says health benefit premiums are deducted from retirement pay?
Is there a statute that says that health benefit premiums are deducted from retirement pay? I don't know. But what I do know is that the ERS doesn't pay the health premiums, and they never paid the health premiums. Thank you, Your Honor.
Pardon, we'll take this matter on the
Please rise.